Weekends on ABC Radio.
We are talking junk food this morning. I'm Ashwin Sedkar, filling in for Emma. And if you have a question about junk food or a diet-related question, give us a call now. The number is 1300 222 612. The reason that this has come up this morning is that there's some research from the Global Obesity Centre at Deakin University. It was published yesterday, and it shows that junk foods are discounted around twice as often as healthy foods, and that has an impact on our health. Accredited practicing dietitian Emma Blank is here, and she specialises in allergies and tolerances, children's eating, and a whole lot more. And she can hopefully shed some light on this issue. Emma, good morning.
Good morning, Ashwin.
What did you think about this finding?
Yeah, I'm not surprised at all through my own personal experience, but also, you know, what we're seeing in terms of the health of Australia, it's becoming easier to grab something in a packet on the run.
It's probably because those foods are much more popular with customers that the retailers have responded this way.
Absolutely. And if you have a good think about it, you know, the way we put so much energy into producing these foods, removing them, you know, exponentially from their original source, a corn on the cob does not look anything like a corn puff. And then we've got the energy that manufacturers put into packaging it, and then the marketing that occurs at the point of sale in the supermarket. All of this energy into something that is actually, you know, nutrient dense, high in energy, so that energy keeps passing along the cycle. And then here we are overweight because we have the extra energy ingested.
The environment is set up to consume these unhealthy forms of calories.
Entirely. The obesogenic environment is alive and well, and it's constantly nurtured every day.
You were mentioning another dietitian who had some strong thoughts on this. Can you explain that research?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, many of our listeners, I'm sure, would be across Rosemary Stanton. She has such a beautiful, balanced view on this, and she can speak so eloquently to that idea of, yes, we can talk about putting responsibility onto individuals, but the reality is that the large majority of us cannot make that healthy choice on our own. And, you know, major public health intervention rarely happens without regulatory change. It does have to be a top-down approach.
Luckily, Australia is quite friendly to red tape normally in the right areas.
Yeah, exactly. It's about lobbying our mates down at Canberra. And I've recently been to the Dietitians Association of Australia conference, and, you know, the larger population public would probably be not quite aware of the hurdles we've got to jump in the background. It's really quite tiresome, the bureaucratic tape around food. It's big bucks.
Jenny from East Brisbane has called in. Good morning, Jenny.
Good morning. Good morning to your guests, and thank you for the work you do.
Oh, you're welcome.
Oh, thank you, Jenny.
I had an eating disorder for many years and finally beat it because I just avoid those aisles in the supermarket where they sell soft drinks and sweets and all those tempting things. Try not to shop when I'm hungry and have a plan and a list.
Have a plan and a list, Jenny. So much can be said for organisation and that flowing on to good health. Wow, thank you for sharing that. That's all my tips.
Thank you.
Jenny, before I let you go, because do you have any substitutes? Did you just go cold turkey on those junk food items, or have you substituted them?
It took a long time, but gradually I let go of the fat, salt and sugar heavy foods, and looking at the contents and realising that a lot of the attraction in those things is flavour, not nutrition.
Yes. Mm. You have to be quite mindful, don't you, to be able to come to that realisation as you're eating it.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call, Jenny.
Yeah, that's a key word, Ashwin, mindful. It's so difficult to stop and actually pause and breathe and consider the flavour.
Yes.
What is on your tongue? I've done lots of mindfulness groups over the years with chocolate, and having a group of people, and you sit there and you put the square of chocolate on your tongue, and it's nigh on impossible not to chew and swallow before it completely dissipates. because that takes about 2 or 3 minutes.
Right.
And when you do that, you realise the flavour that is left in your mouth really is so artificial. Yes, and it's souped up, you know, it's super concentrated salt or sugar or fat. And if you can cleave that apart in your own mind and realise that there's not a whole lot of flavour there, it actually becomes slowly unappealing
so
over
just
time.
Slow down your eating so you notice this
effect. Notice, yeah.
You're listening to ABC Radio and we're talking about the impact of junk food this morning. Edwin at Shauncliffe has also called in. Had some couple of callers call in. But we'll get to your questions as well this morning, Emma. Edwin in Shauncliffe, good morning.
Yeah, good morning.
What was your question?
Well, I don't have any questions, but we made ham for over 100 years, and we sold ham to a major company, and we made it without soy, wheat, milk, nuts, tree nuts, ground nuts, fish, eggs, sesame seeds, and eggs, and which are the known allergens. And we sold to this to the one supermarket up to 40 ton a week, but someone told them we can do it cheaper, so they dropped our line.
Mm.
Right.
Now they hardly sell any ham in their deli at all.
Yeah, Edwin, I've become a lot more learned over the last couple of years about those background stories. It's really challenging, isn't it, to actually lobby to the big chain something that is fresh, something that doesn't require too many preservatives, additives and colours to keep the line going. And, of course, that means you need regular turnover. And it's often sidelined for something that is shelf-stable.
Well, our ham... It was smoked. It was ham cooked on the bone, right? But we made a patented ham.
Yeah.
We took the bones out and we put the bones on the outside of the leg, wrapped it up in a net, put it in the smokehouse and cooked it. Now, when it was cooled, we could cut that ham thin, put it on a couple of pieces of paper that you got from the... wash your hands, a couple of those thick bits of paper, laid a piece on a plate, put the piece of small thin slice of ham on it, put the paper over the top.
Yeah.
Keep the bacteria from the fridge away from it. Come back in a week, and it'd be all gone crispy.
Wow, and that's your traditional processing methods. Thanks for describing that to us, Edwin.
Calling it, I was getting taken straight back to 1950 there. it was beautiful, but is this the problem that the supermarkets are just not accepting good quality, higher priced products?
Oh gosh, it's a beast, the politics that go on in the background. And you know, most supermarkets in this study that the Global Obesity Centre ran, you know, they couldn't even look at all of the chains of confectionery and commercial foods. There's over 2,000 lines in any standard supermarket, 2,000 examples of ways not to nourish your body that is screaming at us, buy me.
This is a major problem. Like you said, it's not just about personal choice. It's a systemic issue that we have to address as well. Peter on the Sunshine Coast has texted in, what allergy tests would you recommend? Oh, slightly different question. And where would you take those tests?
Oh, great question, Peter. And there is quite a divide amongst allergy medicine and, you know, well, often is in all areas of medicine, really. Do you go with a Western medicalised approach or an Eastern more alternative approach? Currently, the Australian Society of Clinical Immunology and Allergy states that the only valid allergy test is a skin prick test, and that can be performed either by an allergist, an immunologist, or a GP that has a special interest in allergy and is therefore set up to safely carry out those tests. So if your GP isn't comfortable in that space, they need to refer you to an allergist or a specialist allergy clinic, and there's a couple of those in Brisbane.
So you wouldn't do it at a Botanical Gardens market stall?
Look, you know, the IgG testing has been around for a long time. That's the, you know, instant prick your finger and get a drop of blood. But what research is showing us is that an IgG marker will only show you all of the foods your body has, the allergens your body has ever actually been exposed to. It doesn't necessarily give you a clinically useful data. I have patients that come to me with lists, you know, of up to 40 or 50 foods they have to avoid. And of course, that's quite overwhelming and impractical when you're trying to modify the diet.
You're listening to ABC Radio and hearing from accredited practicing dietitian who has come in, Emma Blank, who has come in this morning to talk about junk food. How often can we have junk food?
Tricky question. Gosh, when there's so much of it around, and what's your definition of junk? My first thought, Ashwin, is once a fortnight is probably considered to be reasonable in the current climate. You know, we're constantly bombarded with messages about this unhealthy stuff. And I'm sure most of us indulge a little bit more frequently than that. But if you wanted to moderate your eating pattern and not feel guilty about indulging every now and again, once a fortnight, I think is a reasonable.
So you can't have it every day if you portion control it?
Well, look, there is actually some research that says obesity is not caused with that primary factor of junk food, and there are many individuals who can regulate their treats, you know, that idea of eating in moderation to a reasonable serving size. The flip side of that argument is the 95%, you know, the other 95% of their diet is very nutrient dense, whole foods, fruit and vegetables, legumes, good quality meat, dairy, etc.
Because I do like chocolate every day. And I mean, I can't mention brands on the ABC, but there's a toad-related chocolate that is only 35 grams. And so I choose that every day because it feels better than the 55-gram brands.
I am all for you making that healthy choice every day, okay. Ashwin.
I just needed that permission for my own
conscience. Looking at Ashwin, everyone in the studio, and he's looking very healthy to me. So, of course, that's the proviso.
Not on the inside. That's where it counts. So you are listening to ABC Radio. Emma Blank is an accredited practicing dietitian, and we are talking about junk food today. How does it actually affect your body?
Oh, gosh, it affects your body on a cellular level, which means that it affects every single organ system. You know, our fat cells are little hormone factories. So if you have extra energy and your body is therefore producing extra fat cells, they then become their own little factory of hormones that change the way your metabolism works. And that impacts the hormones that influence hunger and satiety. So it really, you have to think of it affecting you everywhere, you know, from your head to your toes, really, because we can talk ad nauseum about how it impacts our heart and how it increases our risk for cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes, all the chronic diseases that essentially will add to, accumulate to a very poor health outcome. But the thing that I guess I experience every day with my patients is that happens really slowly. And as humans, we're not so attuned to very slow change. So you've got to be proactive and make the change yourself before those symptoms creep up on you.
Do you have any tricks when it comes to shopping and avoiding some of those treats?
Yeah, well, I'm all for Jenny. This idea of sticking to a list and avoiding the aisles. And there has been research done where consumers have just gone around the outside. You know, you actually can get by with not entering any of the central aisles in a supermarket at all. And I know it's really challenging if you're time poor, but I think the idea of being able to commit to the weekend local farmers markets and seeing what's in season and getting excited, you know, picking up on the enthusiasm of these hardworking Australians that this blood, sweat and tears to produce high quality food for us.
That first call, I think, I don't know his name. Jenny, the guy who made ham
earlier. Oh, Edwin.
Yeah, can you access those kind of products? Not at the supermarkets, but at certain boutique stores now.
Yeah, and it doesn't even have to be boutique. I mean, I guess that's the pressure that Australians might feel. Oh, I don't have time to, you know, do my weekly grocery shop by stopping into three different locations. A lot of these farmers are coming to the farmers markets and selling their meat at point of sale there. And sometimes it's just about starting the conversation with your local butcher.
Yes.
You know, hey mate, where are you procuring this stuff? What's in it? Consumer advocacy drives change. And that's part of the reason why we have meat that is produced in intensive farming and, you know, cannot be treated with the nuance and the love that Edwin was giving his ham.
That was it was a week-long process.
Exactly. It's slow. It's slow food.
Slow cooking.
Yeah.
And slow consuming, like you were talking about the mindfulness before, just the general pace needs to slow down if we want to be healthier.
Yeah, definitely. At times when I felt my eating is getting a little bit off track, it's just something as simple of, okay, no snacks, Emma. Let's put the effort into breakfast, lunch and dinner, something that's really flavoursome and nutritious, and trying to make sure you're not grabbing for something that's quick and easy chew in between.
What do you think of the Health Star rating system?
Gosh, yeah, this is a bit of a political storm. Look, I think in general, I found my experience with consumers is that it's confusing. The main issue I have with that sort of intervention is that the serving sizes are arbitrarily selected by the manufacturer. It's not necessarily driven by a regulation and what we consider to be a healthy food portion. The daily intake values are targets that are designed for assessing the intake of entire populations, not individuals. So, for example, the daily intake figure you'll see on the front of some of these packages is 8,700 kilojoules, and that's applicable to probably about 25% of the population. Men who don't need to lose weight, women who are under 30 but greater than 180 centimetres tall, or women that are 31 to 50 and greater than 190 centimetres tall. I mean, I can't put my hand up to that figure. And that's the basis for those star regulations. So the other issue I have with it is that they don't distinguish between nutrients for which we need an increased consumption, such as dietary fibre, and they don't delineate between specific nutrients that we should be decreasing, such as sodium. And because packaged food contains so much sodium, it's based on values that are for the upper intake, not an adequate intake. So it's really manipulating the facts somewhat.
Is the problem, like you've alluded to before, that the manufacturers have too much power in the system and the dietitians and more independent voices don't have enough when it comes to presenting food?
Oh, absolutely, Ashwin. And so, you know, the dietitians and the public health nutritionists are saying, well, you need to avoid that food altogether, whereas conversely, the food industry want to say, no, it's a free market. We want to put it to the individual to be able to make the choice. And the reality is that all of us cannot possibly be armed with that discretionary information to make that choice.
It doesn't seem like this issue decides elections, though. Is this something you're really struggling against to get the political will to change?
It doesn't. It's fascinating. But, you know, the wise Rosemary Stanton, her position is perhaps we do need to make that environmental sustainability stance and look at it from the point of view of producing packets to, you know, elevate this conversation around obesity, and maybe that's the way we need to look at it. Can you imagine if every household just dropped those three discretionary, so those three junk food items that are in 93% of Australian children's lunchboxes?
What are those items?
So those items are chips, biscuits, sweet confectionery. There are even some breakfast cereals. I mean, that Global Obesity Centre research looked at 30% of breakfast cereals have enough sugar in them to fall into the same category as confectionery.
If people don't want to go cold turkey on some of those items, can you mention some healthy substitutes to chips?
So, and I mean, I like to come back to this idea of quality. And so something like chips, you know, is always going to be high salt, but there are brands that make their chips with higher omega 3 and 6, you know, fats. So you can be brand savvy. I always recommend that people look on the back of the packet. If there are more numbers than there are words, having said that, the food industry is getting savvy now and actually describing the entire preservative additive name instead of using numbers. But school yourself up on what a preservative additive and colour looks like. Otherwise, home bake. You know, there's nothing more nourishing than mum's, you know, favourite muffins, and they freeze and then they can go into the lunchbox instead of the large supermarket chain muffin that absolutely has 4 or 5 minimum non-food items before you get to, you know, the good stuff.
It's a complicated conversation. As you said, it's partly what we choose to do and partly what the government needs to do. But
And schools and, you know, and pro-physical activity. I'm sure lots of people are getting riled up with this conversation, but it's, you know, it's a whole of society collaborative that I think we need to think about instead of blaming individuals for not making that great choice.
Thank you for bringing that conversation to us this morning. Emma Blank is an accredited practicing dietitian. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Ashwin.
On your radio and online.
At home or on the road.
This is ABC Radio.